Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Welcome back to Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast. I'm Jessica Trotter, and I'm joined in our virtual booth by my co-hosts, Cheryl Lindemann and Mari Garza, and we're your cattle selectors. Hey, ladies, how you doing?
Hey.
Good morning.
I know. It's kind of going. I understand.
I think we're on about 5 months of doing these in this way, right? Not meeting together.
Yeah. Yes.
Five or six. So
it's a harder way of doing it.
It is.
I will say so. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But we're here.
How are we doing? I know it's the end of the summer. We're going into school year. That in itself is a scary thing.
Yes.
It's been interesting.
It is, and it's hard to believe the summer really is over.
You know? Yeah.
Practically.
I mean, it's been so dark in the evenings. Early evening. It feels like early evenings. I mean,
definitely.
It's been interesting.
And that colder snap last week, you can really feel fall kind of coming in the air.
Especially at night.
Yeah, that change is coming, definitely.
Really good sleeping weather.
There you go.
Definitely.
How did reading go
for all of you this summer, you know, overall?
I'm inching and clawing my way back, but I am nowhere near the way I used to read.
Yeah.
I'm just not. It's really interesting. I mean, if you just sort of, it's frustrating, but also if you just sort of stand back and look at it, try not to feel anything about it. It is fascinating to look at how different it is and how it's changed how I do things.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been listening to a lot of books. Like, I listen to a lot of books in general, but, like, even more so this summer. I don't know. Yeah. I've had trouble, like, getting a hold of what I want to get a hold of, and I've gone out and purchased some books, which I rarely do, but...
I can definitely relate to having to purchase some things, because as selectors, we know, and I think our members are feeling this too, the supply chain is a little messed up right now. Everything is just slowed down.
Super slow. Yeah.
Yes. Some things I've just had to get in different ways. Had to adapt to reading eBooks more than I was used to before this, that sort of thing. So it's really made a difference in my reading for sure. And Jessica, you were going to say.
Oh, I think it's really interesting. Mari saying she's listening more, because I feel like looking at our use, even on the digital side, it feels like listening's down, but it's a funny mix for people. I mean, some people are listening so much more, and then, those people that were really listening as a commute, that seems to have gone down considerably.
Sure.
So it's just, again, it's sort of, if you stand back and look at it, there's some really interesting things about this. I read a lot less. I have a harder time getting into a title, but I still have found, great books. But it's just been, it's been interesting to kind of go through this.
Yeah. And to look at what the things that I want to read by the end of the year too, I really had to strategize that a bit. What do I really want to make sure I've read and can talk about by the end of the year? And, get some of those things on hold and get them lined up and try to fit them into some sort of queue. Mm-hmm. It's because the end of the year is coming quickly.
So. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
And it's really, so much is coming out now.
Yes.
It's not like there's a lack of really good reading material.
No, there's not.
Yep. Great titles. It's just figuring out what is manageable by the end of the year with a slightly slowed down pace, for me, what I'm looking at. I've been finding too that I've been leaning toward just this last month. I was really on a fairly decent clip really since March until August, really hit the reading skids. And I started focusing again on, I joked I was going to talk about horse training books today in the podcast, because that's really what I've been reading a lot of, and looking at recipes for baking. So if that tells you what my mind is, but I've really been leaning in that direction and loving that we can do the holds pickup again, so we can get stacked books.
Yes.
Yeah.
I will honestly say, every once in a while I feel a little bit guilty, because I've started requesting cookbooks.
Don't feel guilty. That's great.
So my bag of books. Or bags, depending on what I'm doing. Yes.
The bag of books. It's a delight. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I actually really like the bags that Kettle's giving us because it kind of helps me keep my books organized. Mm-hmm. Like, I end up putting like all my picture books in one bag and then I take my J fiction ones in another and I can go through them. I'm like, well, this is helpful actually, because often they just end up all over the place on my coffee table. And
so you didn't know you needed sorting bins. That's what.
So thank you, Kettle, for those brown and white bags.
Side benefit of the bags.
There you go. So we talked about a couple of different things going forward. We talked about self-care and how we're doing that way and ideas for that. We talked a little bit about mental health. We talked about humor. Where do you want to start?
I'll start.
Oh, Amadi, don't really. want to start.
One thing that I want to say or sort of promote, I guess, I have really been thinking about like how important it is to take breaks.
And yes.
Whether it be vacation or, you know, making sure you take a lunch if you're working at home. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I ordered this book, it's called Your Brain Needs a Hug, Life, Love, Mental Health, and Sandwiches by Ray Earle. She's British, and I want to say she lives in Romania, but I could be wrong. It's not like a super serious book about mental health, but she kind of writes from a place of her own personal experience. And she really insists at one point about, you know, just making sure you take a break when you feel overwhelmed. And now I'm talking like, you know, a 10-minute break from everything, your computer, your phone. Mm-hmm. You know, if you've got a whole list of work tasks, just to sit and be, go sit on the porch or take a walk around your office building. I don't know. I thought it was kind of worth flipping through. It's, like I said, not a serious book, but I liked how.
Yeah, but that sounds like a great message and reminder.
Exactly. It appealed to me because that, you know, my brain does need a hug. I feel like my heart needs a hug. So.
And I think that's another thing to keep in mind when school's starting up next week, that children need that too, or teens.
Yes. Yep.
They're doing their schooling.
Absolutely.
And they get certain kinds of breaks just because of the large classes. If they go to, you know, if they haven't been homeschooled previous, the school day has that sort of built in. So if it's just that intense parent-child interaction at home, they're going to need those breaks too. You know,
definitely. So, yeah, yep, definitely.
Really timely. And the parents will need them too.
Yes, very definitely.
Yeah.
Sounds really good.
What did you have, Cheryl?
I actually wanted to go back to one I didn't get to talk about earlier this year. It was probably one of the books I enjoyed reading most for the whole year. And it was called Half Broke by Ginger Gaffney. It's a memoir. And really touches on mental health in many ways. It's a memoir, but it's set at an alternative prison ranch in New Mexico. And Ginger Gaffney, the author, is a horse trainer and a writer. And she's called to a lot of different situations, but she was called out to this ranch because the horses were truly dangerous. They were so aggressive in a way that generally most horses don't really get. I mean, absolutely aggressive. They were eating out of trash bins. They were dominating the place. There was one with a wound, so huge gash on her face, that it couldn't even treat it. It was really a serious situation. And when she got there, she realized that, you know, she was an experienced horse trainer, but this was really intense. And so it's a story of how she works with the horses, but really how she works with the residents of the prison ranch. Becomes close to them, becomes close to the horses. So it's a story about, you know, healing and transformation and about how healing is not always linear. You know, the relapses for a lot of the residents and some really serious struggles. And then also about her, Ginger Gaffney herself, who as a child, she was mute until the age of 6 and really extremely uncomfortable with the world of humans. And much more comfortable with horses. So they sort of unlocked who she was. So it's a lot about healing and body language and language that's beyond words. Words are not interpersonal relationship, that type of words, and what can be found through that healing and redemptive quality of animals. So just a beautifully written book and really powerful, even for those who don't necessarily love horses.
Right. Mm-hmm. Within this topic, are there other titles that you wanted to talk about, either of you?
Yeah, I'll throw another one out there. It goes more into Madi's collection area. This is one that I think we've mentioned briefly, but we didn't go into much detail on. It's called Listening with My Heart, A Story of Kindness and Self-Compassion by Gabby Garcia and illustrated by Jane Quitan. Oh, right. This is such a lovely book. And again, a JE picture book. And this is a really simple story for children about a little girl and about sort of a loss of confidence that she has in a day, and about how she really needed to learn to be a friend to herself. Mm-hmm. And it seems very simple, almost simplistic, but it's really powerful because it talks about that, self-compassion, really. And there's a nice note for parents, some activities for children. And the illustrations are very colorful and bright. And I feel like it's a soothing story that I've had experience that my child particularly enjoyed this one. And I think other children would too, sort of go back to about that being a friend to yourself.
Yeah. Being kind to yourself and thinking well of yourself, being as kind as you would to a friend if you want to show kindness. So many of us like are constantly thinking about how to serve mm-hmm. others and be a good friend, and to like just make sure that we do that with ourselves as well and not mm-hmm. be
yeah. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Really enjoyed that one. I had one other on this topic, perhaps a little lighter than the first book that I mentioned. This one's called Brave, Not Perfect, Fear Less, Fail More, and Live Bolder. It's by Reshma Sojani. And she's the founder and CEO of Girls Who Code.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So yep. This was a quick read. I highly recommend everybody to pick this up. It's quick. And it goes through being perfectionism and how to be brave, how to fail, and habits for building in ways to avoid that perfectionism that can stop us in our tracks, especially girls and women. And she talks about how often the way that young boys are raised and young girls are raised set girls up for perfectionism, for people pleasing, for not making waves, mm-hmm. For, you know, going to bed and worrying about, oh no, I sent the email. Was I rude in that email? Oh, I don't know. I shouldn't have said that. Oh, you know, that kind of thing.
Right. We don't recognize that at all.
Yeah, actually.
not at all.
And one of the things that really stood out for me in the beginning of this book was a lemonade test. It was done by a major news group. I think it was ABC, perhaps. I don't know. But it was of children, girls and boys. And they gave them lemonade that had salt instead of sugar. And literally the boys were like, oh, it's so gross. Oh, my gosh. And the girls didn't really say anything. And they said later they didn't want to hurt someone's feelings.
Right.
So that is one of the powerful stories out of here. But she also talks about going to a playground and watching sets of parents with girls and boys on the playground, and how boys were, you know, falling and getting back up and climbing, and how, you know, one mother was straightening her girl's bow, helping her in the sandbox when her little sand thing fell apart. And just all these different things that we subconsciously sometimes do when raising children. And the relationship to coding, and why the author founded Girls Who Code, is that she realized that coding is all about making mistakes. Mm-hmm. Making a mistake, having to redo it, having to perfect it. And that this is particularly good for girls, not to mention that so many fewer girls are in tech professions, of course, right? But also just that process of being like, it's okay, just throw it out there. And this talks about all the companies where failure is encouraged And that is still kind of a hard for me to certainly think about, you know, failing and thinking that's like encouraged, right? It's like, keep trying, right. Keep trying. So there's some really deep conditioning with this. So anyway, that was a really, really powerful read. And I think everybody can really benefit from thinking about how perfectionism can stop us in our tracks and help us, you know, stop us from moving forward. So recommend that one for sure.
Well, okay. So when we were kind of talking about topics, what jumped out for me is sort of the humor aspect of what we were discussing. I feel like that's something I've had to grab onto to get through all of the strange and interesting times we're living through. So I have most of my titles are really kind of from that point of view. And it's, you know, humor is personal. Everybody has things that they, that appeals to them more, but there's such a fun variety out there too. One title I've been sitting on for a while is a nonfiction set of essays, Bury My Heart at Chuck E. Cheese's by Tiffany Midge, who is a member of the Standing Rock Sioux. There's this real movement to kind of really recognize that, you know, I want stories by people of color that doesn't explore just their pain. She's an Indigenous humorist. They're serious essays, but there's a lot of humor to her writing. And, you know, so if somebody liked Sarah Vowell or Roxane Gay, especially a bad feminist, that's the sort of writing we're talking about. So in this collection, she's using pop culture to explore colonialism, appropriation, the actual issues at Standing Rock, the water, water keepers. She also tackles, you know, her views of Wonder Woman or the famous pink hats during the Women's March or the Westworld series, and offensive holiday costumes. It's fun, but really pointed political commentary. And she should be on everybody's radar. I mean, if you like Roxane Gay or Sarah Vowell, Tiffany Mitch should be right there with them. In a totally different direction, I'm still, of course, reading romances. Those are getting me through as well. there's a new book called Boyfriend Material by Alexis Hall. And this is, it's just a fun take on the fake relationship trope. It's the estranged son of a rock star. He's just had to live in the shadow. He has nothing to do with his father. He's had to live in the shadow of being his father's child, but not have any relationship with him. And on just a bad night, he's caught off guard by the paparazzi, who just show up every once in a while just to kind of make his life uncomfortable. And he is not drunk or anything like that, but he trips coming out of a bar. And now he's, of course, must be a druggy child of a rock star. But his workplace decides they're basically going to tell him he needs to have an image cleanup and he needs to have a nice, normal relationship, which he pretty much assumes is illegal for them to say that to him, but he also needs his job. So he ends up contemplating a fake relationship with a gentleman who's a friend of a friend. He's a straight-laced barrister who's seemingly absolutely perfect, who needs a date to his family reunion. So they have nothing in common, but something about the relationship actually starts to work. And it's a fun, funny take about two bruised but improving young men. So it was laugh out loud funny. I know there's a great staff pick that Yale did for it too. If you're looking online and keeping an eye on stuff on our website and our staff picks, it's just fun. It was just a fun and funny book.
Good.
Has laughter helped you guys? Does laughter help you guys?
Yeah. Definitely. But yeah. I think you made a really good point that humor is so subjective.
It really is.
It's really funny. And sometimes I don't always think I do have a good sense of humor because I don't always, a lot of what is funny to people isn't funny to me.
Ditto.
I mean, yeah. that's just, yeah.
I think it's probably how everybody feels to some degree.
Yes, exactly.
You know? Unless, yeah. So that makes it really, really unique. Madi, did you have a humor title for today?
A humorous title.
You don't have to. It was just the thing that I grabbed onto.
Yeah.
I can give you a couple of more that are just different. So for example, I don't know who I was, I think maybe I was talking to Madi about this one. Saint Young Men is a new manga series. I am sort of just getting comfortable with manga, which is, if you're not familiar with it, it is a form of a graphic novel, but it reads in a Japanese style. So you're starting from what we would look at as the back of the book and reading right to left.
Yeah.
So it does take a little adjustment. Once you're going, it's fine, but it just, I do find myself flipping the page the wrong way if I'm not careful. But this is, it's a slice of life story, which actually seemed to be my favorite. And it's really just following a couple of people around through their life and just funny situations that they find themselves in. This is a kind of a weird one because, you know, I like those. It's about two not so normal young men sharing a gap year. They've decided to take an apartment in Tokyo. The two young men are Jesus Christ and Gotama Buddha. And they are just going through life sharing an apartment in modern day Tokyo. And they sightsee. They avoid their landlady, but not for normal young men reasons. They can pay their rent, but they weird things happen around them, as you might guess. Occasionally, flocks of birds will just come and hang out. She's like, are you feeding them? And like, no, they just come. They've developed hobbies. Jesus Christ is a blogger. Buddha has been screen printing t-shirts. They want to go sightseeing. So Jesus picks the first place without telling Buddha, and they end up at a Buddhist temple. And Buddha's like, you know, I can't do this. I can't go in there. And he decides he's going to wait outside. But while he's waiting outside, people just keep coming up to him and saying, can I take your picture? Can you do the pose? Can you? It's not that they necessarily think he's Buddha, but he looks enough like Buddha that, and outside of a Buddhist temple, that they want to take pictures. So he ends up kind of trying to hide what he looks like by buying a baseball cap from the Buddhist temple. It really pokes fun at our commercialism. It pokes fun at internet culture. It's just a sort of a fun, interesting look at life. But it's actually really interesting because this particular series, version of the series, it's the first English edition, has a lot of, they do actually put sort of a list of references in the back of each issue. Just to sort of explain some of the humor if you're not familiar with either Christian traditions or Buddhist traditions. Oh. It's just absurd but fun.
Yeah.
And then just last night, when I should have been in bed, I opened up my bag from my holds yesterday and pulled out a book called Everyone's Awake, which is a picture book by Colin Molloy of the Decemberists, and with illustrations by Sean Harris. It's just absurd. Again, absurdist humor and lovely. It's for that child who thinks there's a party going on when they have to go to bed. It's a great kind of go to read aloud for the family. There's a lot of references a kid is not going to get. But it's this kid who's like narrating, like he's in bed and everybody was supposed to be tucked into bed, but they're all out there, not awake. And they're all awake. They're all doing things. And it goes from peaceful, you know, listening to music and knitting to trapezing on a ceiling fan and playing whist with a ghost or practicing their Sinatra. And it gets wilder and the pictures get louder as the story goes on until dawn when he comes downstairs and everybody's passed out on the floor.
Fun's over now.
Yeah, but the details are fabulous. There's just so much going on in the.
I think I do remember this for reading this.
And there's a spread that has, we the librarians, there's a spread that has a bookshelf in it. And if you kind of, I just found myself looking at the titles on the bookshelf. The details are great. Yeah. It just made me laugh because it's there's both, you know, the very interesting range of titles. It's a racially mixed family. The bookshelf plays with that too. It's just, I don't know. There's a lot of fun in it, and there's a lot going on outside of the text too.
Sounds good.
It's a picture book that it would make a fun read aloud.
I have a picture book I want to mention.
Okay.
This is The Princess and the Petri Dish. This is by Sue Fleiss. It's released in April. And when I was listening to Cheryl speak, I thought this sort of goes in, you know, this idea of, you know, trying to encourage kids to just try things. And if you don't succeed, try again, get up and keep mm-hmm. going. Mm-hmm. This is kind of a quirky princess type book, except it's not really the usual princess sort of story. Mm-hmm. It's Princess Pippa. She is not really interested in learning how to curtsy or anything like that. She is a child who has an inquiring mind, like as far as science and math. And she's really into experiments, and you know, she doesn't always succeed. Like in the beginning part of the book, you know, she says, you know, her fingers turn blue, her slimy is kind of messy and not quite at the right consistency. But she's on a mission to make the green pea, which is something her parents have been trying to have her eat, to make it sort of into a chocolate pea. It's really, really cute. But the emphasis really is on, I mean, she's got all sorts of stories that, you know, a spread about how the peas grow and get out of control, and how she goes about trying to keep at it, keep working and searching for a solution. And I liked it because it's, you know, a bit about, you know, scientific inquiry and, you know, trying to find solutions, but it's still a picture book and it's fun. And I think it, you know, if anybody is really into the Rosie Revere and Ada Twist scientist mm-hmm. series books mm-hmm. by Andrea Beatty, I think you'd really enjoy this. So.
Very cool.
That book sounds really good. And Maddie said the word solutions, which actually made me think of my next book.
There you go.
So this is a very long awaited book, about, I believe, 6 years long awaited. And it's scheduled to hopefully come out September 22nd. It's called Solutions and Other Problems by Allie Brosh.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And so this is hopefully is coming. I've seen a cover and a back, and I read that there are 1,600 drawings in this one, comic drawings. And if many of our listeners may be familiar, but if they're not, the author of this book is Allie Brosh, and she wrote Hyperbole and a Half, Unfortunate Situations, Flawed Coping Mechanisms, Mayhem, and Other Things That Happened. And that was in 2013. Yes. And also... Yes. She had a blog for a long time before that as well. And I remember getting this book and thinking, what is this? You know, it's just the cover is really compelling. It's like this line drawing of this dog and this very large-eyed character. You're not quite sure. But that character is her. And the first book, Hyperbole and a Half, really a story of her childhood, her adulthood, her dogs feature heavily in the book, but also becomes a story about her severe depression and you know, how she pulled out of that depression. So it's one of those books, again, that's really, really funny, but also isn't at the same time. I mean, really funny. Like, I cry laughing in this book. Yeah. It's hilarious. It's just, I mean, and how she can capture emotion with this character.
Right.
Yeah. The eyeballs.
The section about her dog. Oh my gosh.
It's hilarious. And about her childhood, she just, she explained this like sort of crazed, you know, child. You know, she was just so high energy and just like challenging and it has this like kind of affectionate recalling of this child, and you just love her as a child. I mean, what an incredible kid, you know. So it's I'm really looking forward to this. I hope that it's coming. Is her book are just a gift to everybody, really. I mean, they're just there's so much truth in there. And again, how do you convey so much emotion with this little character, with this little ponytail and these eyeballs? I watched a little video about her, and she says that the eyes, that's where it all is. It's the eyeballs and the pupils and how they change and the angles of them. And it's just, it's incredible. So she has such a gift, and not just her drawings, but her story and the way that she shares it. I think it's just really powerful and funny and important. So I really can't wait to get this book. I hope that it happens. So
yes,
so that one is coming for that. So, and then I have a lighter book too, with my last book that I read that I wanted to talk about.
Sure.
I wanted to talk about it because of the Michigan content too. Jessica, you may have seen this one on your Michigan Notable Books Committee. I'm not sure, but Hungry for Harbor County by Lindsay Navama. And this book, it's just a beautiful, large book. And it is a recipes and stories from the coast of Southwest Michigan. So it covers, you know, the Red Arrow Highway part of Michigan.
Ooh.
And so not only is it recipes and, you know, beautiful photographs, of course, but there are profiles of local businesses embedded in the text, so right in the page. So there'll be a recipe, but then she'll feature a local small farm. And
very
the next
cool.
page, yeah, it's so cool.
No,
it's
I like, haven't seen it yet.
Oh, it's wonderful. And I think I've seen this before where, you know, give a shout out to businesses, but this is so integrated into the book. I'm not saying it hasn't happened before, but it stood out to me as being really special. So it's not just local farms, but it's wineries, bakeries, restaurants, different local producers, markets, farmers markets, but also other types of markets and antiques. And then a really great back section, a directory of local businesses all through this area. So it's just really fun. And I thought it was really neat to read because I really didn't do traveling this summer. So it
right.
felt like traveling to me a little bit. It was like right. oh, that Michigan travel, you know, and I have a recipe I'm going to make. So maybe I can report back on this one. It's Tiffy's okay. Summertime Key Lime Butter Cookies.
Oh, okay.
So I'm really looking forward to those. Yeah. So it's just really fun. And on that one, she features Townline Beach in Union Pier and Warren Dunes State Park in Sawyer, Michigan.
Nice.
So, yeah. So really recommend this one. And especially for those who love that part of Michigan, but even not, it just gives you that traveling and vacationing in Michigan feeling throughout the whole book. So just a light, fun read.
Well, speaking of Michigan, I have a J fiction, middle grade book I want to recommend by Kelly J. Baptist. I hope I'm saying her last name correct. It sounds like Baptist. It looks like Baptist. She's a West Michigan author. And the title is Isaiah Dunn is My Hero. This is an own voices novel. And if you're not familiar with that term, it just kind of refers to an author who is writing about their own experience, their own perspective, usually, you know, from an underrepresented group. So Kelly, I heard her speak actually at a library conference. I've been very interested in her work. And this is really her debut book as far as I can tell. But you might recognize the character Isaiah Dunn because he shows up in The Beans and Rice Chronicles of Isaiah Dunn in a short story collection, which is called Flying Lessons and Other Stories.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. By Ellen Oh. And this is kind of an expansion of that character. I mean, in a short novel, it's really like just snapshots of his days. And he is a child who is experiencing grief because his father has passed away. But what's most notable about him is that he really loves words and he writes poetry. And even though his little sister is you know, kind of getting into his notebooks and drawing pictures around his poems. This is an outlet for him to express himself. And I feel sometimes like, you know, the books, I think it's easy for some people to think that, you know, a child, you know, books out there about a Black child's experience, you know, only has to do with poverty or has, you know, that these are the stories. There's so much in the Black experience. So I feel like I just want to get that out there. But this book is about a child
who's
experiencing poverty. And he, you know, he's living in a motel because his mom cannot pay the rent. His, you know, he calls the sleep inn where he stays, like the smoky inn, because it's so smoky. There's so much cigarette smoke.
Yeah.
And I've noticed this recently in other books that I'm reading, as well as this one, that, you know, there's commentary from the child's perspective about perspective of noticing their parents drinking of alcohol and just, you know, that the effects that it has on them. So, I hope you get a hold of this one. We have it in digital, and even though it's in a cart, it hasn't quite made it into our catalog system yet, but it will be there very soon.
We are trying hard to catch up with that.
Yes, we are. We're a little behind, but we are trying hard to get everything ordered, and we have great, great staff that are
very much
really awesome, awesome work. But yeah, that's Kelly.
Sounds really good.
Do you want to do another one, or would you like me to do my last one? Do you want it which direction?
I'll do one more actually that hasn't been released yet.
Okay.
It's called Pine Island Home by Polly Horvath. And she is, like her.
Love her.
She just captures like the dialogue of children so well. I mean, this is a story. So I bring this one up right away because Michigan sort of in a very tiny way features into this one too.
Ooh, really?
This is a story about four girls, daughters, sisters who have missionary parents. And I think they're out near Thailand or somewhere out there, and their parents pass away. And they need to find someone to take care of them. And it's like four daughters, maybe roughly 2 to 3 years apart in age. Mm-hmm. And they end up on Pine Island in British Columbia. And the reason it appealed to me is because I recently read another book about British Columbia and was so interested in what I was reading that I looked up pictures. And I did look up, there is an actual Pine Island, British Columbia. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. But this is, it's just funny because, you know, they're considering all the different places that they have to go, you know, and no relative wants to take them, but one of the relatives is from Lansing, Michigan.
Oh, so
we don't want to come to Lansing. That's a boring place. Had to laugh about that. I'm like, hey.
Oh my goodness.
But anyway.
I didn't know about all those. Okay.
They end up in British Columbia and, you know, they find out that the aunt that they're getting shipped to has also passed away. So anyway, it sounds, you know, grimmer than, it sounds really grim, but it's actually a really beautiful story of, you know, it's the eldest teen daughter who's trying to keep the family together and not allow social services to split them up. And
right.
Just the scenery, the cover alone is really pretty. And I highly encourage you to get online and take a look at pictures of Pine Island in British Columbia because it's a nice place to take your 10-minute break. Just looking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's coming out September 1st.
Okay.
She writes unforgettable characters.
Absolutely, yes.
Especially a lot of the adult there often are guardians or caretakers or, you know, a neighbor or something like that. And they're just so rich.
Yeah.
Generally kind of eccentric in the most beautiful way.
Yes, there's an eccentric character.
Yeah, very eccentric. Too. And it's sort of that like acceptance. Acceptance just oozes. It's like, just be who you are, you know.
Right.
You know, this is who I, you know, yeah. So it's really cool. And a lot of like older women who have followed really unique life paths. Mm-hmm. In these books. That's what I've noticed in hers. I love her books. So that's great. So you had another.
Yeah, I had one more, and this is lighter, but like a lot of my things, touch of magic to it. I talked about Rosalind's first book, Natalie Tan's Book of Luck and Fortune, before, I think, on the podcast.
Yeah, about a year ago.
Her new book is Vanessa Yu's Magical Paris Tea Shop. Mm-hmm. It is about Vanessa is actually I think she's an accountant, basically. I mean, she's, I think, doing tax accountants. But she's inherited a family ability. She can foretell the future. And it's ruining her life. She hates it. She can't go on dates. Every time she has on a date, which her mother is pushing on her because her mother wants her married, she ends up telling somebody the future. She goes to a cousin's wedding, and as the wedding, you know, after the wedding, she comes into contact with the groom, or no, it's actually the bride, and says he's going to cheat on you. You know, it's and she can't stop it. She can't keep it. Yep, exactly. And she can't stop it from coming out. And the thing is, she feels like everybody hates her for the whole thing, and everybody else is sort of looking at it as it's a gift. It's not like you chose it or anything like that. It's given me something to think about, but she can't see it that way. All mm-hmm. she can see it is it's she's just the bearer of bad news. She's hurting people. And so she has an aunt who has that gift, who's been trying to work with her for years, and they just butt heads. But a prediction comes along that so puts her, and it actually isn't the one at the wedding. That's the next to final straw. But it throws her so completely that she decides she's going to completely give herself over to her aunt. She's going to learn how to control this. She's going to figure this out. Her aunt is in the process of moving to Paris to open up a tea shop. And it slowly kind of expands that the aunt has a past in Paris. There's people she knows in the community. Her aunt tells her that you can't have a love life and be the fortune teller, that those two lines don't mix. And Vanessa totally rejects that. And it's sort of a going back and forth of it's about choosing your own path. It's even when it seems impossible, and it's just the connections are neat, the characters are neat, and Vanessa just sort of finds her own way, and helps her aunt in the process find a bit bigger and brighter life than she thought she was going to have. So it's just a sweet story. There is a lot of humor. There is those moments of kind of horror. As the, you know, predictions come out, you know, she can't stop it. But it's just a well-told story. There's that bit of magic between the fortune telling and even early on, her mother's like, the aunt has been telling the mother the whole time, she's not going to have a successful marriage because of the fortune telling ability. It just doesn't work that way. And the aunt is single. Mm-hmm. But they even go so far as to hook her up with a professional matchmaker from China, fly her in to have, you know, try to get her set up. And even the matchmaker's kind of looking at her and saying, yeah, I don't know if I can work with you. I don't know what it is, but there's something wrong with you. And, you know, it's just one of those, it's really interesting the way that it all kind of turns out in the end. But it made me smile. It was, you know, it had its definite moments.
Yeah. Sounds like a good book for right now, for sure. Well, I'm going to throw one more out there that I'm really excited. We talked about waiting on holds, and I was waiting and waiting for this book just because of, you know, getting the books from the vendors, yeah, and that sort of thing. And so it feels like I've been waiting like a year for it. I know that's not possible, but it feels that long. It's called Sigh, S-I-G-H, comma, Gone. A Misfits Memoir of Great Books, Punk Rock, and the Fight to Fit In by Phuc Tran. And this is just looks like a wonderful, again, own voices memoir, and really, really funny, There's a lot of, you know, pre-publication excitement about it, and I finally have it literally in my hands. So I'm really looking forward to that. So I'll be reporting back on that one.
All right.
A future podcast. So the books are coming in. So if
anybody are
waiting and a little frustrated, you know, hold on, it's coming. We're working through
them. The Suzanne Collins book is now out there.
That was a hard one, but yeah.
So we have a lot of
holds, like but
you know, sometimes just everything just got really tangled up. So if the books are coming, and we are finding that our members are checking them out. So it's wonderful. So
keep up with the curbsides and
requesting
contactless pickup. And it's we are getting a hold of things. It's just been a little bit of every part of the supply chain has been a little weird. So
yeah, exactly. Okay. Right.
Well, it was lovely talking with you guys.
Yes, it was well.
We don't see each other. We really don't much at all.
No.
Well, thank you guys. And we will see you next time.
Yeah. Okay. Have a great weekend.
See y'all.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Hi, it's Sherry Jones with some good news. Capital Area District Libraries has reopened with contactless item pickup. Reserve items by placing a hold online or by calling a branch, then just schedule a time for pickup.
Member and staff safety is the number one priority,
so CATL will remain in compliance with CDC guidelines. For details about their contactless service, safety measures, and more, visit the library's website at cadl.org.